You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning at 6:30. I'm here with the former Barnet and Brentford manager, amongst others, Martin Allen.
a lot of others.
It's been a few, but that's all right, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is. How are you?
You know, I'm doing well. You went to see Take That last night.
Oh, unbelievable. Absolutely.
Why up in Birmingham?
A friend of mine works in the agency that looks after them.
Oh, right, okay.
And so he mentioned it to me a couple of months ago. I said my wife and I, Lisa, both love Take That. Well, Lisa more than me. And he said, next thing you know, got a text message. We've got two tickets for you up in Birmingham.
Brilliant.
Absolutely fantastic last night. Oh, unbelievable.
Right. And dancers and all the rest of it. I mean, a proper show.
Oh, Stoney, at the end, there must have been 30 dancers and singers.
Yeah.
And then they've also got an extra dancer, about a dozen ladies dancing as well. Lulu came on.
Lulu.
Unbelievable.
Still looking good.
Oh, brilliant.
Still looking good for 70-something.
Oh, you wouldn't have known it.
No, you wouldn't know it. No, I saw her on a train once, and I was sort of just staring at her a little bit, thinking, wow, you look pretty much the same as you did in the 60s.
And her voice.
Still got it.
When she sang, and she was on a podium right up near the roof, and all of a sudden she turned round and the lights all went on to her. It was a total surprise to everybody, and she stood there. It was amazing.
Did she just do the, where? Just do that, and then just stopped and left? Because I'd be happy with that. It was Lulu, wasn't it? Up there doing the, where?
Yeah. No, just her voice and just her presence and just her power. Awesome. But that was only for one song. But the rest of it, the dancing, the singing, the atmosphere.
Great.
What a great night.
You would recommend this show. Take That, currently touring around the UK. How many's left now? Is it three, two, three?
What, to go?
Yeah.
Oh, no, they've got a lot more. They're playing at Anfield.
No. I mean of the band. Of the band.
Three, you know, group.
It's not a band, is it? If they're not playing an instrument, it's a group, isn't it, really?
They did. To be fair, they did play a bit of piano, guitar. They've done a few bits and pieces. Just awesome. You can't help but, even if you're not that keen on their music, the show and what they put on was just unbelievable.
And they're doing Anfield.
They are.
One of those special singing nights at Anfield.
Yeah. Carrow Road.
Are they doing a tour of football stadiums?
Yeah, MK Dons. Right. They're playing there, Stadium MK.
Ashton Gate, I've been told.
Yeah. No, just awesome. If you can get a chance to go and see it, it is mind-boggling. It's non-stop action. And that Gary Barlow, he is a star.
Well, yeah, he is. We were both out late last night. I was at this big gig, the Lighting Design Awards in London. I was presenting awards to people.
Oh, well,
yeah. Yeah.
Light and design? You know what?
Well, you know,
bulbs and lights.
The design of lighting is what it is. And they have, but they obviously, when you see these amazing buildings, like hotels in China and lobbies, you know, and you go, wow, what an amazing. The lighting design is what they're rewarding.
Right.
And so the companies that do this stuff are there from all over the world.
Amazing.
And they got me as entertainment. And I, you know.
Did you put on a good show last night?
I had singers, dancers, everything, right? There were 30. At the end of my show, there were 30 singers and dancers on that stage, right?
In your mind.
I'm doing Carrow Road next week. Doing the Lighting Design Awards at Carrow Road, the Ashton Gate. And did I put on a good show? I did my thing, right? I made them laugh. As I said to you when I came in, I was explaining, I told them how much I love lighting design. It's like been a thing for me when I was a kid. And my mum said to me, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to design lighting, mum. And she said, you've got to have a dream. And I used to lie awake at night worrying about luminosity and things like that.
Luminosity? What's that?
What happens is I pick up words from the website. I don't know. It basically means how bright it is, I believe. You know what? They're probably lighting designers moaning at me now.
Stoney, I wonder if any of your lighting and designers from last night had any influence over the show at Take That in Birmingham.
Oh,
because the lighting and some of the effects was unbelievable.
I think these people are more buildings as opposed to stage lighting, which is a separate thing again, but it's a skill. You, when you see it done properly and you go, that's very nice. These people know what they're doing. Well, that's why I was giving them awards last night. So I was at the Troxy, which is, by the way, a beautiful venue. Do you know this place?
What's it called?
The Troxy in Limehouse. It's an old... Do you know the Ritzy in Brixton? You ever been to that?
No.
There's a few of these big old... They're like big old cinemas, about 1,000-seat cinemas.
Yeah.
And they've been converted to either theatre spaces or they've been converted to maybe 8 cinemas like the View do, don't they?
Yeah.
But this one is still a whole room. Upstairs is a balcony and a deck. It's beautiful.
Sounds like you enjoyed yourself.
You know what? It was okay. It was a bit late. I didn't get back till 12:30. I got back around the same time you did.
You've done well getting in here then this morning, mate, didn't you?
Thank you. It was only in Limehouse. I probably should have got a hotel and stayed in town and come down here. Anyway, by the way, we are going to talk about the sport that's been happening and will happen at some point. We're just catching up. Now, England, Gareth Southgate has named a 27-man squad as England begin their preparations for this summer's UEFA Nations League final. It's slightly unfortunate the way it's worked out. I mean, I say unfortunate. It's great. Two English clubs in both of the European finals. It doesn't really affect Arsenal because they don't have English players. Chelsea had a couple, but both of them are now out injured. Is there anyone else in the Chelsea squad that might be in this squad? Is Ross Bartley in there? No. So there aren't any Chelsea players in the squad, but there are quite a lot of Tottenham and Liverpool players, all of whom will be playing in the Champions League on the 1st of June. And I'm assuming if you're playing a game like that, that's quite intense. You don't really want another game 5 days later, do you?
No. And also people's mindset as well after the big games to be played and then to go into those England games after a long, long season. It's going to be tough for them.
Yeah. I suppose the big questions to be asked to this squad, why is Kieran Trippier in the squad and not what Aaron Wan-Bissaka? I mean, I watched, you were at that game, weren't you, the Palace game, when Palace beat Arsenal 3-2 at the Emirates. Wan-Bissaka was brilliant. He had Iwobi in his pocket. I think Trent Alexander-Arnold's distribution is absolutely amazing and I would have him in the England team right now. But I think Wan-Bissaka's the second best right back in the country and I think he's a better defender than Trent as well.
Yeah, we've got Alexander-Arnold and you've got Walker as well.
Yeah, but you know what? You're right, and Kyle Walker. But then if Kieran Trippier is going in there, then I don't know. I mean, it seems to me that Wan-Bissaka is a better bet, isn't he?
Well, Wan-Bissaka is extremely quick. He is double quick.
Yeah.
And for Crystal Palace, he is what's needed. If England are going to dominate possession and wants their fullbacks to have good quality play going forward, then that would be his weakness. His attacking play in the final third, when England have a lot of the ball, like hopefully they will, and dominate the game, then maybe that's why he's gone for Kieran Trippier, who's good on set plays. He's got quite good, not excellent in the final third, and who has improved, and he's been playing Champions League. So maybe that's the reason Gareth's gone with him.
I mean, I know that Gareth Southgate is quite loyal to the guys who did well for him in the summer. But we're in May and this will be played in June. This is a year later. I mean, I'm all for loyalty and everything. But I think Kieran Trippier has had a poor season in the main. I mean, the first half of that Champions League game against Ajax, he had a mare. He actually came back and did okay in the second half. But I don't think he's had a good end to the season. And if you were just picking the team on merit on the last maybe 8-9 weeks of the season, he wouldn't get in, would he? The squad.
Well, Stoney, just thinking about it aloud, at Tottenham, if you're sitting back at Tottenham and say, how are Tottenham going to improve that team? What are we going to do to improve our starting 11, which will be the challenge at every club at the end of every season?
And
they'd probably be looking at a new right back, I would say. The forwards at Tottenham are very good. The centre-halves, the goalkeepers may be questionable at times. But I think right back would probably be the one position that Mauricio Pochettino's probably looking at and saying, I need to improve that.
Which is why we're asking the question about Kieran Trippier. The other surprise, if you like, I mean, you tell me, Nathan Redmond of Southampton and James Ward-Prowse, two English boys from Southampton in the team. Both of them have done well this season. They've had a good second half to the season since Ralph Housenhoodle turned up. They've looked like decent players. Nathan Redmond has looked like a serious danger for Southampton.
He's got pace. He's got speed. And he can get in behind the opposition. So it's all well and good, Stoney, with these teams keeping possession and moving the ball around the halfway line. But with players like Redmond and Sterling, it gives you the opportunity to get in behind and behind the back three or back five that plays deep with their pace and speed. And Redmond's got it in abundance. And with Ward-Prowse, I think he's a very good player. He's brilliant on set plays.
Set pieces, he's absolutely fantastic.
We've seen now in these big games how important set plays are. So I think Ward-Prowse is right to be in there. Redmond, I can see why he has picked him.
Yeah, and we do have some pace. We have some class up front. Harry Kane is in the squad. Now, I mean, I guess in the end, Harry Kane deserves some latitude from the England manager for what he's done for him. But I can't see Harry Kane being fit for this, can you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Harry Kane, he won't be far away.
He won't be match fit, though, will he?
No, but he brings something extra. I'm not sure he'll start. He might not start, but he'll be there or thereabouts. Champions League final, he's going to be there or thereabouts for that. So
that's what Pochettino has said. I'd be amazed if he starts in the Champions League final. I mean, he might be on the bench.
But
if he's fit, you sort of feel like Pochettino might be duty-bound to pick him.
Not duty-bound. He's one of his best players. He's a catalyst of their attack. He's a catalyst of their team.
Yeah.
And he brings people into play. He links up superbly well when he finishes. So if Harry Kane is fit, there'll be no doubt behind the scenes they'll be putting on some training games behind the scenes.
To get him ready.
And of course, it's not the same as playing a Premier League game to get ready for a Champions League final. But with a player of his stature and his aura, then I think if he's fit, I think Tottenham will play him.
And one more that I wanted to ask you about, Joe Gomez at Liverpool. I mean, I think he's class, Joe Gomez. I mean, the thing is about him is he can play right back as well or right wing back. But as a centre back, you put Joe Gomez next to, say, Harry Maguire and John Stones, he's not going to let you down, is he?
He's a good player. He is. £5 million they bought him from Charlton.
From Charlton, yes. What? And Charlton feel like they got slightly the sticky end of that deal.
Well, they would now.
Yeah.
But at the time, £5 million to them was probably a good deal. What a good player. And Liverpool have been without him for a lot of this season. But he can also play left back, right back, centre back. He can play holding midfield player. Liverpool have got themselves a fantastic player. And I personally feel that he will be pushing into that England team. Because, he is so quick. And in those big competitions against the best players, you do need quick defenders.
Now let's hope they're not too worn out after. I say there is Ross Barkley is in the squad and he could be playing in the Champions League final. But anyway, we'll see. The Nations League starts 6th of June against Holland.
Love Sport.
It's in Alan here. Let's talk a bit of golf. The USPGA currently taking place at Bethpage on the Black Course. Brooks Koepka, an absolutely brilliant round of 63 yesterday. Koepka told Sky Sports News, even though he got a 63, it might well have been even better.
Very, very pleased. You know, the funny thing is it could have been a lot lower. Probably two par fives and missed a short one on 11. So, I'm not going to dwell on that. Don't get me wrong. I'm very, very pleased with how I played. Putted great and excited for the rest of the week.
No, don't dwell on the fact that you might have missed a couple of putts that might have got you a 61 when you got a 63 round one of the most difficult courses in the world. Let's have a chat now with the golf journalist Ben Coley. That was a hell of a round, wasn't it?
It certainly was, yeah. The only player in the entire field, 156 players, and he was the only one who didn't make a single bogey. So yeah. It's kind of what we've come to expect from him. But I think it does tell us something that he still thought it could have been better, because I think there are probably only two players on the planet who thought it could have been better, him and Tiger Woods, and everyone else just thought, yeah, that will do.
While they're talking about Tiger Woods, I mean, he didn't have a brilliant round, two over. Was it just, did it look worse because of how well Brooks Koepka played?
Yeah, I guess it did. To be nine shots worse than half a shot per hole than your playing partner never looks great. He fought back in the middle of it. He had that wonderful run from the first to the fourth where he made two birdies and an eagle, and he was suddenly under par, and at the time he was tied for fifth. And I think he'd be really, really annoyed that he gave those shots back just sloppily over the final few holes. It gives him a mountain to climb, and it was fairly disappointing to see him so scrappy throughout the round, but I think probably that's the result of not having played since Augusta, whereas Koepka played last week.
And Rory McIlroy, he seems to have taken a little bit of a back step again.
Yeah, he'll have been really frustrated yesterday because he had so many decent chances and he had a lot of putts. I know we sometimes focus on his putting and it's obviously not a strength, but he had a lot of 20-foot putts that just hit the edge. And for Koepka, they all went in. And I guess that can happen. I think at least for McIlroy, and there are a lot of players like this, at the end of the round, he had something to take with him into Friday, and that was a birdie, his first birdie on the 18th hole. And I think there were loads of players like that. Jason Day, Justin Rose, Ricky Fowler. They all fought back a little bit. And I think that keeps them with some sort of hope of reeling in Koepka going into the second round.
McIlroy actually said that he couldn't remember the last time he'd been round without getting a single birdie. So that would have been slightly odd if he hadn't managed it. Tommy Fleetwood, the leading European on 3 under. I mean, people have been talking about Tommy Fleetwood being a contender in majors. Does this course suit him enough that he can actually compete?
Absolutely. I'd say it probably suits him as much as any course he's ever played in a major championship, because what Bethpage is just a total test of execution. It's not so much that you have to make a lot of decisions, or it's not even that you have to make that many birdies, although Koepka made 7. It's you have to step on the tee and find the fairway. And he's one of the best drivers of the ball on the planet. And he did that for most of the round. And he's really good at just clinging on, you know. And he said in his interview last night that he likes it when it's hard. And I think, obviously, a lot depends now on what happens with Koepka, but I don't think Tommy Fleetwood will go far. So if Koepka isn't to win, he's definitely one of the most likely. And certainly the nature of the golf course, the sort of relentless test, is perfect for his game.
And what's the weather forecast for the next couple of days? Because with more rain, that rough would be brutal, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully the rain's going to stay away now. The wind today is a potential factor. And interestingly, it looks like it might die down in the late afternoon, which is when Fleetwood and Koepka will be on the golf course. Obviously, they'll have greens, which are probably a little bit bumpy to contend with. But the forecast, if anything, looks like it might favour those guys. And certainly, I thought the conditions on Thursday were slightly easier in the morning. I thought Danny Lee's round in the afternoon was absolutely outstanding, every bit as good as Koepka's. But as the weekend goes on, the key thing is that it's going to get hotter. And I think if it gets hotter and it doesn't rain, these greens could get really interesting. And I think that's where, you know, it's easy to think after what Koepka did yesterday and after what he's done over the last 2 years, that this is already his to lose. But, you know, he's going to face some challenges at some stage. And on Thursday, he got away with his bad shots. And I don't think that will be the case throughout the week. And what will matter is, can he make a 6 instead of a 7 when it does go wrong? Because at the Masters on Friday, started off in the lead, he got to the second hole and he made a 7. And he'll be looking to learn from that. And if he can, then obviously he's going to be very, very hard to beat.
Anyone else that we should look out for? Molinari got 2 over yesterday. I mean, it's not really the sort of course that will work for him, is it?
He could do with another 20 yards. I mean, the interesting thing with Molinari yesterday is that he seemed to miss a lot of fairways to me. So his very first tee shot was extremely poor. He had to hit a provisional and obviously ran up a double bogey. I think the one who, again, a bit like at Augusta, where he finished alongside Koepka in second, scored well without looking like he was really trying, was Dustin Johnson. So at 1 under par, he'll obviously be on the radar, along with Ricky Fowler, who really fought hard because he was 2 over par early on. I think he double bogeyed the 11th hole and fought back really, really well from that. And I was really quite impressed with Jason Day. He's another of that group on 1 under par that just fought it out. And on any other day, they'd have been so pleased when they walked off the golf course. But obviously, they all walked off the golf course shooting 69, knowing someone else had gone and shot 63. And it happens to be the guy who's won 3 majors in under 2 years. So Koepka kind of changed everything for everyone yesterday. But if he does stand still, there are so many guys on that 1 under group who are ready to catch him.
We're not ignoring him anymore. That's the main thing. I know he's got a bit of a thing going on that we're not paying him much attention. Hey, keep shooting 63 on the first day of a major and we'll pay you plenty of attention, mate. And that's what he did. Thank you very much, Ben. Nice to speak to you. That's Ben Coley there talking about the US PGA Championship, Bethpage Black course. This course is unbelievably difficult. They've got a sign up saying only experienced and excellent golfers play this course because it's incredibly difficult. And it's what Tommy Fleetwood was saying. It's great as long as you stay on the fairways and hit the greens.
Yeah, it seems amazing. And what we were told yesterday with our guest on yesterday, we had Stoney, it's over 7,000 yards long.
Yeah, and it's 7,500.
And it's a par 70.
Two shots less than Augusta,
which is incredible. And there's par fours over that are 500. Over 500 yards.
So par five at 619 yards. That is an enormous hole. And they're getting longer. The playoffs are happening right now. We've seen big games this week. Leeds against Derby, an absolutely fantastic match. Villa, West Brom, big games. Last night we had Sunderland against Portsmouth. Sunderland got a result. They got a 0-0 draw through to the final. And fair play to those fans who made the 665-mile round trip. Tonight we got Charlton against Doncaster. Charlton are 2-1 up from the first leg. Have you been involved in... Did you play in playoffs? Were there playoffs when you were...
No playoffs. No, it's automatic or not go up. No, I've had teams in playoffs. I've had Reading. We got to the playoff final against Walsall to go up to Division 1.
Beat.
Yeah, well, and a playoffs with Brentford twice, 2 years running.
Yeah.
Lost to Sheffield Wednesday in the second one. And in the first one, I can't remember who we lost to.
You haven't won one? Is what I'm saying. And me having a go. You haven't won one.
MK Dons, playoff semi-finals again. Lost that one against Shrewsbury.
Yeah.
No, I've had four or five playoffs now.
And they're highly pressurised, aren't they? You see, I mean, we watched that Leeds Derby game. I haven't seen a game as intense as that. I mean, the games that I've seen that are as tense as that are the Champions League games that we watched the week before. That's the level of tension and there's so much riding on it when you think of the amount of money. Not so much in the lower divisions, but even still, I watched the first 20 minutes of that Portsmouth-Sunderland game last night. There was a lot going on in that game.
It's awesome. When you're involved in it, the tension, the build-up, the preparation, organisation, logistics of getting it all right, it's thrown upon you on the last game of the season. And it's not just about the money, it's the chance to play at Wembley, then win at Wembley. And what it brings, not only for those players in the Championship wanting to play in the Premier League, and of course their wages will probably double going into the Premier League, but for the players' lower levels as well, you can go right the way down, League Two playoffs. They're fantastic occasions. And you saw with the Derby versus Villa, the dressing room
Derby
Leeds with Frank Lampard, who's won trophy after trophy after trophy, played for England how many times. He's in the dressing room in the middle of all his players singing and dancing. It looked like the happiest you've ever seen Frank Lampard ever. And he wasn't playing. And of course, it's his first step into management. What a moment it was to see Frank joyous like that.
Well, to see them celebrating in front of their fans, I mean, you absolutely get how big it is. And Derby, because my missus said, so this is not the final, this is the semi-final. I said, yeah. So she goes, so they might not get promoted. I said, no, they're not. They are underdogs against Aston Villa. But I said, you've got to enjoy nights like that when you win away in that manner, the way they did, in such an intense atmosphere. And he thought, fair play to them, have a good time.
Yeah, and it was the same, though, Stoney at West Brom.
Yeah, with Villa.
For the Villa players. Yeah. The Villa players, it wasn't just because it was a derby. It was the fact that they'd managed to get through the game, the relief, the pressure, the stress that you're under, the desperation to win. And when it pulls off and you've got through to the final, it's an unbelievable feeling. Unbelievable. And then, of course, as Frank Lampard rightly said straight after the game, whilst players were being interviewed on the pitch, the job is not yet done.
I think it was Mason Mount, actually, who was being interviewed, and he was beaming. He's a young kid, he's 20, 21, he looked delighted, he scored a lovely goal, and it was great to see. And then as they're celebrating, Frank Lampard comes over, hugs the pair of them, and then goes, well, job's not done yet. And it was funny, the look on his face changed. He went, oh, yeah, job's not done. Let's enjoy this. And they will enjoy it for the night, and fair enough. And they got the playoff final against Villa. And Villa are big favourites, aren't they? I mean, in that game.
I think they are. Yeah, they've had more experience. There's more experienced players in that team.
They were there last year.
Yes, they were indeed. So they've got experience. They know what it's like. They've lost, which I think is important. And now they come back with an added edge.
It's interesting you say that. Whenever I talk about the Champions League with people, right now Spurs might prove me wrong in this particular case, but I do think Liverpool are big favourites. I think part of the whole thing with the Champions League, and you tell me if this is the case generally, you have to feel some pain. You have to feel some pain. And the point you're making about Villa is, having lost that playoff final, they will come back with that muscle memory of the pain that they've suffered, and they will go, let's not have that again.
You're 100% right, in my opinion, Stoney. And they've also been through the experience of preparing for a Champions League final. And they've been there.
This is Liverpool we're talking about here, yeah.
They've got that feeling. Yeah. They've got that about them. So I think they will be favourites going into that game against Tottenham, yeah.
Yeah, but I think but on a more general point, it's about having that muscle memory of pain so that you go, I don't want that again.
Yes, 100% agree.
I mean, in the same way as a stand-up, what happens is part of the reason that stand-ups sort of, they care about each other, even though it's a very solitary experience, because we've all been through that pain of dying on our ass on more than one occasion.
Have you done that?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, on loads of occasions. But the point is that pain is like this scar tissue that you build up and you remember it. It is seared deep in your soul. There's a point during a gig where you think, well, this is going south, this. I have to get on top of it. And if you've been there before, you're more able to deal with it. And I guess it's the same in football grounds as well, is it? Football games.
Absolutely.
You have to have some memory of loss in order to, you know, you see the warning sign slightly earlier.
I think with that philosophy in mind, I think Liverpool will definitely be the favourites going into that Champions League. Definitely.
Because they were there last year, yes. And they know the competition better, don't they?
And they've kind of died on their feet. Like you were talking about when you were on the stage and a couple of times it hasn't happened. For Liverpool, I think they will be in a much, much better place to win this game mentally.
Yeah, I would imagine that. This is Love Sport. Hey, hello young people. It's nice to chat to you. We've got another young person who's come in, Paris. Look at him. Just out of shorts.
But still in them.
Still wearing them, actually.
Ironic, that, isn't it? Yeah.
What you got, Paris?
You can... No, I was about to say something else there.
Never mind, don't we'll worry move about on. It. Sometimes you have to sift through your head, and there's a point where you go, no, this is wherever this sentence goes, I shouldn't go there.
No, we'll move on. We'll move on quickly. A restaurant worker has been labelled a plonker after mistakenly serving up a £4,500 bottle of wine instead of a £260 variety.
Customers, this is in Hawksmoor.
Hawksmoor,
very
Manchester.
Very nice steak restaurant. I know exactly where that restaurant is.
Where is it, Stoney?
It's in Manchester, but I know where it is, on Deansgate, and it's very nice. And £240 bottle of wine isn't a bad bottle of wine either, by the way. That's quite nice.
It's quite nice.
They ordered an expensive bottle of wine. What they got was a absolutely amazing bottle of wine. Did they appreciate what they'd had?
Well, basically, the customers knocked back the wine, and then the error was only spotted at the end of the evening when workers were cashing up. You know, social media then went abuzz with loads of people saying, oh, have you got reservations? We'd like that waiter, please.
Well, that's what was interesting is the waiter, the company director, the guy who runs the whole place, was very magnanimous about it. It said, these things happen. It's one of those things. I hope the guest enjoyed their £4,500 bottle of wine. And no, I'm not having a go at the waiter at all. Mistakes will happen. And consequently, they got loads of bookings. So it's actually, I like the way that the guy dealt with this.
Hey, Stoney, just thinking aloud, can you imagine tasting a glass of wine that's come from a bottle worth £4,500? How much would that be a glass?
A glass of wine is maybe a sixth of a bottle, so it's maybe a £750 glass of wine.
Yeah, that'd be 750 quid.
Well, you would probably say no. I've never had wine that's that good. I don't know what it's like.
What's the most expensive you've had?
I mean, 30 or 40 quid, to be honest with you. Although the truth is, that is £30 or £40 wine that I might have bought. So that, in a restaurant, would probably be about 200 quid, because obviously there's a massive markup on the booze. But I've never had wine that good. Have you?
No.
I'm sure it's... Have you, Paris?
No. No.
What's the most expensive you've had?
A bottle of Fanta Fruit Twist. that's what I've had. That's the most expensive thing I've ever had.
But that's the thing. That's the thing. I'm sure it's very, very
sugar
nice.
Sugar tax, I tell you, Martin.
I'm sure it's very, very nice.
Yeah.
But would it be?
Yeah. I mean, I'm told it's lovely. But even still, £4,500, you'd want someone else to be paying for it.
Possibly.
Let's be fair.
Hawksmoor Manchester tweeted, to the customer who accidentally got given a bottle of Chateau Le Pin Pomerol 2001, which is £4,500 on our menu last night, hope you enjoyed your evening. To the member of staff who accidentally gave it away, chin up, one-off mistakes happen, and we love you anyway.
And we love you anyway, but keep away from the wine.
Keep away from the wine.
Yes. I bet they've got a lot more customers from it, don't
well,
you?
That's the point.
Hoping for that special waiter to come along and
were
pop
you the
us
waiter
up
that made the error? Yeah, yeah. Come this
come
way.
Come over here.
Yeah. Nice quite. To- I mean, nice it'd be tip. Very listen, it'd be very, very nice. But I like to say, I like the way the guy dealt with it.
Yeah.
I genuinely do, you know. And then and this waiter, but I'm going to pop in there next time I'm up on the off chance.
Martin, you've just come back from holiday, haven't you? Beautiful holiday in the Caribbean. Did you? You flew there, yes? I'm
yes.
presuming
you can't swim it, mate.
Well, no, you could have got a boat. You could have, you know, cruise it. I don't know. I'm just asking.
It's a long swim.
Well, it's just one
replacement bus service.
Replacement bus service all the way. Yeah.
All right.
One airline company is allowing you passengers to now pay to sit on their own. So you can now buy a premium travel experience where you buy a seat and, in theory, the seat next to you. So therefore, there will be nobody sitting there.
I'll suggest that to my wife.
I mean, you know what? This sounds like a reasonable idea. Sometimes you don't want to be sitting with people, do you? I mean, could you have a no kids rule?
Do you have to pay for that extra seat then?
I'm sure you do.
Yeah, basically, yes. It's a premium experience. So
you're
buying two seats. It means on a row of three, just the window and the aisle seats are sold, leaving the middle unoccupied, which creates more elbow and leg room for passengers.
They could just do bigger seats, couldn't they? Something like that. I mean, I guess that's first.
Dear Lord,
and
no.
That's first and business class is what that is, isn't
yes,
it? Really?
Yes. You can't.
I think no
everyone.
Children, no small children would be nice.
No
massively
children.
Fat people, do that sort of stuff. Well, no, because you know when some big guy, I've had it a couple of times on planes when a really big guy comes along and you think, please don't be sitting next to me. Don't, because there's not that much room anyway, is there? Really?
What, in economy?
In economy, yeah. You don't really want that. But in the main. Bad breath, that's another one.
Well, I've got to tell you, Paris, on this, when we went out to Jamaica a couple of years ago on a mid-morning flight from Gatwick, within 2 or 3 hours, there was a family that had been drinking, and that was a horrendous journey.
Yeah.
Our flight got diverted from Montego Bay, and we had to land in Bermuda.
To get them off?
Get them
off. And they
off.
Were arrested, I
it
imagine.
It was horrendous.
Yeah,
up in the sky. You can imagine it's quite a nice journey, isn't it? A couple of films, a couple of drinks, have a
not with
sleep.
A loud family.
And it all started kicking off. Proper kicking off.
Mm.
And it was so scary.
Yeah, it was.
So scary. Next thing.
I'd already apologised for that, Martin.
Yeah.
We'd already apologised, all right? Move on.
Terrible.
Move on.
Oddly enough, I went to Australia and there was a guy who, I don't know, there was something not quite right with him, and he was drinking, and he was standing by the emergency exit.
Oh,
and
no.
You're thinking, get away from there. They had to restrain him in the end. They had to, like, tie him to a seat. It's not pleasant. I agree with you. It's not pleasant. What else you got, Paris?
What else have I got? Well, I was going to turn the page, and I will tell you what else I have. The British stiff upper lip is a thing of the past, as a third of adults cried in public in the past year, research shows.
Well, crying? I mean, is de rigueur. Yeah.
Martin. What are you talking about, Paris?
Martin, I mean, here's the thing. Football, we know football has changed. I mean, last week, or the week before last, whenever it was, Vincent Kompany cried on the Monday at the Liverpool, Barcelona. James Milner was crying on the Tuesday. Not a man you would imagine cries that much. On the Wednesday, when Spurs won, everyone was crying. Pochettino, the rest of the team.
You were crying because Spurs won.
I was crying for a different reason. But that, it's a much more normal thing now. People don't, none of that big boys don't cry nonsense.
No.
We don't have that anymore. We understand that everyone feels the emotion and a lot more people are crying.
1 in 5 have become more comfortable showing their sensitive side.
You know what? When the other 4 in 5 become more comfortable as well, that's when we'll know we've won this.
What's the ratio, Paris? 1 in 5.
1 in 5.
Still only
have 20%. Become more comfortable. That does suggest there are people that were already comfortable.
Right, and it also suggests there are people who might be crying but are not that comfortable with it.
Possibly.
You know.
Yeah.
I find it weird when people are not comfortable about showing emotions full stop. I mean, I go to do gigs at comedy clubs and it's generally women in the front row who, when you make them really laugh, they cover their mouths. like, oh, I don't want to be seen laughing because it doesn't seem like it's an attractive look.
Or perhaps they're eating.
I know what's going on. They are covering their mouths because they don't want to be seen to be laughing. And I'm saying to them, listen, you've come to a comedy club. If you come to a comedy club going, oh, it's not very good, otherwise I'll be laughing and that'd be really embarrassing. It's just weird. But I tend to think, yeah, of course show your emotions in public. Of course. British stiff upper lip
I think people are more confident and to be emotional and to let it out.
The stiff upper lip thing was essentially a public school thing. It was never the vast populace. It was just a gentleman doesn't show his emotions. It's like David Niven in films in the 1940s. But it's different now. It's completely different now. It might be the same with the schools you went to, Paris. But in our schools, there were plenty of tears. There were.
Was it good watching those David Niven films when you were a kid?
Well, A Matter of Life and Death is one of my favourite films of all time. You know that one?
No.
No? All right, I'll give you the plot.
Is it black and white?
It's black and white, but then it's also colour at certain points.
Right.
But anyway, I don't want to give away what goes on.
This is Love Sport.
Manchester City take on Watford in their first, in the FA Cup final. It's Watford's first FA Cup final appearance since 1984. Joining us now is a Hornets legend and man who played in that final and a very good friend, Mr. Luther Blissett. Morning, mate.
Morning, Ian. Morning. How are you?
Yeah, now what? I'm doing fine
and
now.
And Martin's there. Morning, Martin.
Morning,
how
Luther.
You doing?
Yeah, very well. And yourself?
I'm very good, sir. Thank you.
Are you excited tomorrow, Luther? Are you excited by the prospect of a cup final?
Very much. Not so much the cup final, but winning the cup final. That is the thing that really, really excites me because, as I've said to you before, I've just had this inkling that it's something that we might do this season, so really looking forward to it.
And I mean, I'm here now with two people because Martin also thinks you're going to win tomorrow. Man City, this is one of the best sides that's ever played in the top division. They've got outstanding talent all over the pitch. So where does the hope come from?
Don't try and dampen my parade before it all starts. Right? You know, really no need.
I'm just asking the question.
Listen, remember what happened at with Barcelona. Remember what you said to me about the Barcelona one?
That's true.
And I said they're going to beat them 3-0 in normal time and win it in extra time.
Yeah. And you were wrong.
I was right.
Well,
because they went into, what time did they get that last goal? 90 whatever minutes.
No,
so that's time.
Later on. But yes,
I'm going to claim it. I'm going to claim it.
I know what you're saying. I mean, I'm just saying. Where are Watford's strengths then? I think the two in the centre, Kapu and Decore, they've looked brilliant all season.
It is. They've done a really good job in their midfield, and Will Hughes also. You know, he goes under the radar sometimes. Will Hughes, because he works very hard and he's a very neat passer of the ball. And he sometimes goes under the radar with that. But then I think the biggest strength that we have on our day, we can cause their centre-halves problems. And I think if we cause the centre-halves of Man City problems, then the full-backs don't get forward like they would like to. And suddenly you find that they're not getting at you quite so much. And that's really what you need to do. We need to stop the ball getting out to their wide people so they don't stretch you from left to right, and then finally put that killer pass in. We need to keep them passing little short passes through the middle and just keep it tight and keep our concentration right. And if you do that, you just give yourself a very good chance.
And what about Troy Deeney leading the line, centre forward, playing between the pair of them, giving them a rough time, winning fouls, breaking them down, upsetting them, breaking up the momentum of the game. Perfect for what's needed for Wembley, I reckon.
It is. It is. You know, Troy came on in the away game at the Etihad. Half-time, and the difference he made straight away, because suddenly Vincent Kompany could not be the one that was bullying the centre-forward.
No.
Troy was suddenly doing that to him.
Yes.
And that definitely breaks up their rhythm and makes life more difficult for them to get into their passing routine. So it is important that on the day our players turn up and they do a job. You know, and I mean, I've said many times to supporters or whatever that I've spoken to that, you know, on the day, they have got as big a part to play as the players, because they can really create that atmosphere that makes the players go that extra mile, you know, and make that tackle which perhaps you wouldn't get to. So it's quite important that, you know, we go there as a united team, because the bigger your team when you go out there, the better. I mean, look at Man City when they win. I've never seen so many people on a football pitch celebrating. And that's really the strength of what they are. They are a team right from everybody back in the back rooms, right the way through to the goes on to the pitch and the supporters as well. And we've got to match them on that.
A couple of people I wanted to ask you about. Holly Bass, we thought he might be banned, but they got rescinded. It was the right decision, wasn't it? And
absolutely,
you've
the
got
right
to be
decision.
Pleased for him as well.
It would have been an absolute debacle if he'd missed that one. And you know something else, Ian? That would have been for the second cup final that the Watford left back would have been suspended if that had happened.
How Luther, strange. I know the other crazy. One. Neil Price.
Yeah. Yeah. Neil Price played in the semi-final, and you know it was hard work. He was up against, you know, one of the best wingers in the country at the time. So it can be very tough for a young lad to go in and make what pretty much was his debut in the cup final. You know, not many of us get the opportunity to do that, and it's a great moment for him.
And the other person I want to talk to you about was Aurelio Gomez, who's going to be playing in goal tomorrow. Ben Foster's been brilliant about this, but they are very, very good mates, is what I'm told.
Oh, yeah, they are very, very good, yeah. I mean, at the presentation evening, Ben Foster says, literally in front of everybody, you know, I hope they offer you another contract for another year.
He likes having him about. It's strange,
really,
isn't it?
No, they are very, very good for each other. You know, they push each other through training. And the experience that Aurelio has is brilliant. But if you talk about a professional, somebody that really works hard and on and off the pitch and knows how to talk to all the younger players and the senior players and just be a real person and a man and that professional, Aurelio has been amazing. And I think that's why everybody would love to see him get another year. And he wouldn't let you down because he's done very well in all the cup ties that he's played.
No, but you know what? If it's his last game and he wins the FA Cup, that is a fitting way to go out.
Absolutely, it would be.
Luther, well, have a brilliant day tomorrow. Honestly,
it
I'm
will
very
be. Just
excited.
Just keep an eye out. If there's a lunatic that runs on the pitch at the end, you know, when they what the big trophy up, it could be me.
Right. Listen, if you get an equaliser in the last minute, it goes to extra time, I will be texting you. You know that.
So, I know. Yeah.
And you'll be going, who scored the goal? I say, come on, Luther.
I wouldn't have a clue. But
no,
well,
fair enough. Enjoy it, mate.
Thanks very much, gents.
See you soon.
Take care, Luther.
Watford legend, Luther Blissett. Now, Luther, by the way, there's a Watford fan special, which was recorded a couple of days ago with Rich Lee and Luther Blissett. It's available as a podcast now and will be on Love Sport Radio at 7 tonight and midday tomorrow. This is ahead of Watford's cup final. Huge game against Man City tomorrow at 5 o'clock.
This is Love Sport.
No, don't dwell on the fact that you might have missed a couple of putts that might have got you a 61 when you got a 63 round one of the most difficult courses in the world. Let's have a chat now with the golf journalist Ben Coley. That was a hell of a round, wasn't it?
It certainly was, yeah. The only player in the entire field, 156 players, and he was the only one who didn't make a single bogey. So yeah. It's kind of what we've come to expect from him. But I think it does tell us something that he still thought it could have been better, because I think there are probably only two players on the planet who thought it could have been better, him and Tiger Woods, and everyone else just thought, yeah, that will do.
While you're talking about Tiger Woods, I mean, he didn't have a brilliant round, two over. I mean, was it just, did it look worse because of how well Brooks Koepka played?
Yeah, I guess it did. You know, to be nine shots worse than half a shot per hole than your playing partner never looks great. He fought back in the middle of it. He had that wonderful run from the first to the fourth where he made two birdies and an eagle, and he was suddenly under par, and at the time he was tied for fifth. And I think he'd be really, really annoyed that he gave those shots back just sloppily over the final few holes. It gives him a mountain to climb, and it was fairly disappointing to see him so scrappy throughout the round, but I think probably that's the result of not having played since Augusta, whereas Koepka played last week.
And Rory McIlroy, he seems to have taken a little bit of a back step again.
Yeah, he'll have been really frustrated yesterday because he had so many decent chances and he had a lot of putts. I know we sometimes focus on his putting and it's obviously not a strength, but he had a lot of 20-foot putts that just hit the edge. And for Koepka, they all went in, and I guess that can happen. I think at least for McIlroy, and there are a lot of players like this, at the end of the round, he had something to take with him into Friday, and that was a birdie, his first birdie on the 18th hole. And I think there were loads of players like that. Jason Day, Justin Rose, Ricky Fowler, they all fought back a little bit. And I think that keeps them with some sort of hope of reeling in Koepka going into the second round.
McIlroy actually said that he couldn't remember the last time he'd been round without getting a single birdie. So that would have been slightly odd if he hadn't managed it. Tommy Fleetwood, the leading European on 3 under. I mean, people have been talking about Tommy Fleetwood being a contender in majors. Does this course suit him enough that he can actually compete?
Absolutely. I'd say it probably suits him as much as any course he's ever played in a major championship, because what Bethpage is just a total test of execution. It's not so much that you have to make a lot of decisions, or it's not even that you have to make that many birdies, although Koepka made 7. It's you have to step on the tee and find the fairway. And he's one of the best drivers of the ball on the planet. And he did that for most of the round. And he's really good at just clinging on, you know. And he said in his interview last night that he likes it when it's hard. And I think, obviously, a lot depends now on what happens with Koepka. But I don't think Tommy Fleetwood will go far. So if Koepka isn't to win, he's definitely one of the most likely. And certainly the nature of the golf course, the sort of relentless test, is perfect for his game.
And what's the weather forecast for the next couple of days? Because with more rain, that rough would be brutal, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully the rain's going to stay away now. The wind today is a potential factor. And interestingly, it looks like it might die down in the late afternoon, which is when Fleetwood and Koepka will be on the golf course. Obviously, they'll have greens, which are probably a little bit bumpy to contend with. But the forecast, if anything, looks like it might favour those guys. And certainly, I thought the conditions on Thursday were slightly easier in the morning. I thought Danny Lee's round in the afternoon was absolutely outstanding, every bit as good as Koepka's. But as the weekend goes on, the key thing is that it's going to get hotter. And I think if it gets hotter and it doesn't rain, these greens could get really interesting. And I think that's where, you know, it's easy to think after what Koepka did yesterday and after what he's done over the last 2 years, that this is already his to lose. But, you know, he's going to face some challenges at some stage. And on Thursday, he got away with his bad shots. And I don't think that will be the case throughout the week. And what will matter is, can he make a 6 instead of a 7 when it does go wrong? Because at the Masters on Friday, started off in the lead, he got to the second hole and he made a 7. And he'll be looking to learn from that. And if he can, then obviously he's going to be very, very hard to beat.
Anyone else that we should look out for? Molinari got 2 over yesterday. I mean, it's not really the sort of course that will work for him, is it?
He could do with another 20 yards. I mean, yeah. The interesting thing with Molinari yesterday is that he seemed to miss a lot of fairways to me. So his very first tee shot was extremely poor. He had to hit a provisional and obviously ran up a double bogey. I think the one who, again, a bit like at Augusta, where he finished alongside Koepka in second, scored well without looking like he was really trying, was Dustin Johnson. So at 1 under par, he'll obviously be on the radar, along with Ricky Fowler, who really fought hard because he was 2 over par early on. I think he double bogeyed the 11th hole and fought back really, really well from that. And I was really quite impressed with Jason Day. He's another of that group on 1 under par that just fought it out. And on any other day, they'd have been so pleased when they walked off the golf course. But obviously, they all walked off the golf course shooting 69, knowing someone else had gone and shot 63. And it happens to be the guy who's won 3 majors in under 2 years. So Koepka kind of changed everything for everyone yesterday. But yeah, if he does stand still, there are so many guys on that 1 under group who are ready to catch him.
We're not ignoring him anymore. That's the main thing. I know he's got a bit of a thing going on that we're not paying him much attention. Hey, keep shooting 63 on the first day of a major and we'll pay you plenty of attention, mate. And that's what he did. Thank you very much, Ben. Nice to speak to you. That's Ben Coley there talking about the US PGA Championship, Bethpage Black Course.
This is Love Sport.
Big news for you, though, is the kingdom is safe.
Why? What kingdom? Our kingdom.
United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. It's safe because there has been a new raven chick born at the hatched at the Tower of London. The first one in 30 years.
There were no ravens before. Wow.
Well, there were ravens, but there hasn't been one hatched actually at the Tower of London. They've had to probably like import them in.
Right.
Because, of course, the famous legend is that there must be 6 birds remain at the Tower of London, otherwise the kingdom will fall.
Is that right?
Yes.
So how many birds have got there now?
A few.
6.
they've still got the 6. I think they do kind of keep 6 round and about.
Yeah.
I mean,
they got to keep some spares as well. Got a spare raven just
spare
in case
raven.
One goes.
Just
go and get
room.
A spare raven.
Yeah.
I went to the Tower of London a few weeks ago for a little tour around there. Absolutely amazing.
You didn't try and steal a raven?
No, I had a bird with me already. Beautiful, beautiful place. Worth going to. The quick joke there, Stoney.
It's all right. We let it run.
Breakfast comedy, they call it. great place to go. Great place to go, Paris.
Yeah. Well, I mean, have you been, by the way?
I have been. I went on a school trip.
Yeah, I went as a kid. I saw the Crown Jewels. I was vaguely sort of impressed.
Yeah, but that was about 40 years ago, wasn't it?
Yes. It was actually longer than that.
Go again and see it in a different sort of different outlook. It's amazing to go and see what happened. And some of the stories that the guy who took us around was unbelievable.
When you hear about the suffering that has taken place there, of course, it is quite amazing. I did also, by the way, I was down there about a year or two ago, and they had all the poppies. Thousands of poppies that I laid out in the bit between the tower and the wall near the bridge. So, okay, anyway, there's a raven there. So rejoice,
the kingdom is saved.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, all the best news stories for you. That's what I bring you in, top quality stuff.
So we've got a nice new bird down at the tower.
We do. What else we got?
Now, apparently Brits lose their upbeat holiday feeling in under 4 days after returning from a break. Researchers
well, Martin, when
suggested...
did you get back?
Tuesday, I think.
Tuesday, and it's now Friday. This is the point where you will lose the upbeat feeling, but you went to take that last night, which gave you a bit of a boost. Sometime over the weekend, though, Martin, you are going to slump. You're going to look round your house and go, this is not Jamaica.
Coming in here to see you two at this time of morning is a boost.
How nice.
And every day it's bright, lively, full of enthusiasm and full of the sunshine of life. So every day is like a vacation.
It sounds like he's taking a mickey, but I actually believe he's
coming
serious.
In here, it's like a vacation, isn't it? How often do you get up at this time of day and have a good laugh?
Well, most mornings, but before that, not very often.
No, but nobody does, do they?
No. So
we do.
I think you're right. That is true. If we're doing the jobs that we like, that's quite nice.
Yeah.
But usually 4 days back.
4 days back, then you feel you lose the buzz of the holiday. You lose all the kind of that relaxed stuff, relaxed state you might have been in. You're all of a sudden back into what you're doing.
Yeah, I can see that a little bit.
You can't be on holiday forever. It's just how it goes.
It's not fair, Ian. I want to be on holiday forever.
Don't, though, Paris. You don't, actually. Well, you know, we always talk about if you win the lottery, I'd give up work. You got to do something. Got to do something. Otherwise, you go mad. So, yeah, what? 4 days. You know what? Okay, we'll take another holiday in 6 months' time. You'll get it back again.
Love Sport.
Thanks for listening to the Ian Stone Comedy Breakfast Podcast Edition. I'm back every weekday morning, 6:30.